Confession, I don't read a lot of poetry, but I do love discovering any kind of writer whose work is both beautiful and accessible, such as the poet Tracy K. Smith. She won the Pulitzer Prize 2 years ago for her third book of poetry, Life on Mars, which is partly inspired by her love of David Bowie.
Some America's torture brown. Now Mickey Mouse has grown up a cow.
It's also about her relationship with her father, an engineer who worked on the Hubble Space Telescope. Her latest book is not poetry at all. It's a memoir called Ordinary Light, and a lot of it's about her relationship with her mother, a deeply religious homemaker. I spoke with Smith about her family in 2012, just after she'd won the Pulitzer Prize. Welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you.
In my introduction, I described your work, which I like very much, as accessible. I realize that in some circles, that's probably offensive or a fighting word. How do you feel about it?
I don't feel offended by it. I actually feel happy about it. Like, I'm interested in using language and having fun with what it can do and what it can create, but using it as a tool to get toward understanding and insight. And if I'm thinking about something that is mysterious or difficult or complex, I like when the language can be as transparent as possible, just to make way for the larger thing.
And your project includes the world as we know it and live in it, and there's nothing wrong with referring again and again to David Bowie, for instance.
I gave myself permission many years ago to let anything that is interesting, even mildly important to me as a person, into my work. And around that time, I started realizing, oh, you know, I'm going to let David Bowie in. I'm going to let Frank Zappa. I'm going to let world events that that I had felt were not quote-unquote poetic in the past, let them into the work and see what happens.
Speaking of David Bowie, I'd love it if you'd read the first section of the poem, Don't You Wonder Sometimes.
Sure. Don't you wonder sometimes? After dark, stars glisten like ice, and the distance they span hides something elemental. Not God, exactly. More like some thin-hipped, glittering Bowie being, a star man or cosmic ace, hovering, swaying, aching to make us see. And what would we do, you and I, if we could know for sure that someone was there squinting through the dust, saying nothing is lost, that everything lives on, waiting only to be wanted back badly enough?
That was Tracy K. Smith reading from her poem, Don't You Wonder Sometimes, about David Bowie. Was Bowie an obsession of yours when you were a teenager?
I remember, watching some 1980s music videos like Let's Dance. It's not even, I guess, what we now agree as David Bowie's best moment. But as a kid, and then as I got older, I became really interested in the Ziggy Stardust era. I wasn't even a kid, I have to say. I was probably like 30 when I became kind of obsessed with that moment. And I think what was so powerful about it to me was the sense of the imagination as something that is capable of creating a whole new world and a whole new sense of self. And I really have always just been so grateful to that. And I wanted at some point to find a way of writing toward that in my work, acknowledging that.
A big section of this book deals with your father's death a few years ago. You write, "Who were we without your clean profile nicking away at anything that made us afraid?" What was your dad like?
My father was, when I was growing up as a child, I thought of him as larger than life. I thought of him as this Renaissance man who could do anything.
He was a scientist.
He was an engineer.
Yeah.
And he was deeply interested in the world and how things worked and grew and transformed. And he loved making furniture, and he, you know, grew trees from seeds because he was curious about what would happen.
It's like a dad in a movie or something.
Yeah, I have very sweet memories of him. And when I got older, he became human in a way that was really wonderful. We became friends in a way.
Would you read one of the poems about him, the one called It's Not?
Sure. It's not that death was thinking of you or me or our family or the woman our father would abandon when he died. Death was thinking what it owed him. His ride beyond the body, its garments, beyond the taxes that swarm each year, the car and its fuel injection, the fruit trees heavy in his garden. Death led him past the aisles of tools, the freezers lined with meat, the television saying over and over, "Seek and ye shall find." So why do we insist he has vanished, that death ran off with our everything worth having? Why not that he was swimming only through this life, his slow, graceful crawl, shoulders rippling, legs slicing away at the waves, gliding further into what life itself denies? He has only gone so far as we can tell, though when I try, I see the white cloud of his hair in the distance, like an eternity.
That's Tracy K. Smith reading It's Not, from her new book, Life on Mars. He worked on the Hubble telescope.
Yes.
Which has obviously been sort of one of the big deal in observational astronomy the last several decades. How did that, having a father who did that, sort of shape your view of existence?
To be really honest with you, when he was working on the Hubble, I was 8 years old. I became really interested in looking at these images after he passed away.
Uh-huh.
And somehow...
The images that the Hubble has captured.
Oh, yeah. And then I could remember moments of... I remember the first book that he received with some of those images in them, and him showing them to me and telling me, this is what I was able to help, you know, contribute to. And maybe it's taken that many years for that to really register for me.
And he's an engineer. You're a poet. Are those such different ways of thinking about the world? Did they lead to differences between you as father and daughter?
Well, I remember my father, although I never read one of the poems that he supposedly wrote when he was young, my mother would always tell me that when they were courting one another, my father would send her love poems that he had written. And I always felt like, okay, there's this kernel of connectedness that he and I share, even though we veered in these very different directions.
How did you start reading, caring about, and then writing poetry?
I guess there are all of these different starting points. The earliest one I can remember is grade school, writing a poem, and feeling wise. But when I was in college, I was lucky enough to be exposed to a lot of living poets. I was at Harvard in the early 90s, and Seamus Heaney taught there, and Lucy Brock Broido and Henri Cole were other really important teachers that I had. And, you know, I would see that poets were people who ordered meals and, you know, wore shoes and did all the things.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, exactly. And it seemed like something that I could imagine doing right then instead of waiting until I was at the end of my life.
Although it also, one can imagine, okay, thinking, on the other hand, I'm an undergraduate. This is an undergraduate folly, fancy. But you didn't have that. You said, no, I can actually do this.
When I look back, it's probably, it feels a little pretentious. I remember I chose to declare that I was a poet. And I remember my roommates at the time being so annoyed because I would say, I can't go out. I need to work on my poems. I need to stay home. But for me, I think what was happening was I was discovering a language for articulating some of those feelings that are normally inarticulable for somebody who's in, you know, late adolescent.
Tracy, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you.
Tracy K. Smith's new memoir, Ordinary Light, comes out this spring.